Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is We Talk Productions, one of the few black-owned radio stations, and you're live with the best mind in black America, Meeshawn Williams, and this is the Cutting Edge Show. This evening, Justin Jackson will be interviewing Snacks, an author and poet who has published 3 books and has also performed at numerous venues around this country. Snacks, welcome to the show. And Justin,
thank you. Oh, thank you so much, Meeshawn, for that wonderful introduction. And once again, I want to thank Snacks for, taking the time to, come on to the show. And this evening, we're going to be discussing using art as a tool to communicate. And so that's going to be the basis and narrative of the show. And I know, Snacks, can you tell, the listeners, a little bit about yourself? Like, who is Snacks? If someone was to say, who is Snacks? What do you think would be an appropriate answer for that?
Oh, man. Well, first and foremost, thank you for having me on your program. Really appreciate it. I never take for granted the platform to be able to speak and express myself. But, yeah, speaking to that question, who am I? I'm a person. I'm a brother. I'm a husband now. First and foremost, I mean, I write to express myself and also to help others. Yeah.
That's awesome. And I guess, just starting things off, I guess, when did you first start writing?
Man, I started writing to get with a lady friend in high school, and that's how I started writing. I was like, I'm going to write her poems. Like you would imagine, it didn't work out, but, that's cool. I continued to write after that, and I saw how it could be used in different ways, and just not only how it affected me, because it was a coping tool for me, just I was shy growing up, but it was an outlet for me to be able to express myself unapologetically without judgment, because the paper isn't going to say anything back except what you put down on it. And then I saw how it could affect others, just expressing yourself authentically. And then that kind of worked me into performing and now even doing workshops and even helping young writers out. Because I believe, we all can express ourselves authentically. Like Marianne Williamson said, it gives permission for other people to let their light shine and be themselves without judgment. And in turn, not only can you learn to express yourself, but it also, more importantly, help you to open up your ears and realize that everybody got something to say. Everybody got a story to share. You ain't necessarily got to agree, but you can at least listen and respect what somebody got to say and express.
Right. No, most definitely. I definitely agree with that. And then I guess, since one of the things, you just brought out is, you started writing, to talk to this girl in high school. I know that you're currently married, but question, did it work? Did you accomplish your mission there?
No, I didn't. Not at all. It felt miserably.
Oh, man.
Good enough writer. No. It's all good. Hey, what's funny? She appreciated the poems, though. She's like, hey, you're good, though. Like, but I just don't like you. I mean, I like your poems. Maybe
right.
Your poems were you. Maybe I'll
yeah.
No, it's all good. I always got to tell the truth on that one. Be like, that's how it started. I can't deny it. Truth's always funnier than a lie, so.
Most definitely. And for all the callers that just, winding in, I have Samuel Hawkins, also known as Snacks. He's a poet from Paducah, Kentucky. He has published 3 books. He has, performed in numerous different venues around the country. He's a huge leader in the Kentucky group. He was a pillar at the Boys and Girls Club, where he made his staple before taking his new adventures. And Snacks, just just to, you know, show, you know, how well your skill set has improved since, you know, being rejected by that lady, you know, that special someone at that time. Why don't you kick something off? Would you mind sharing something, some of your poetry? Would you like to, you know, spit something for the
I do not mind at all. Thanks for the invitation. I'll do a poem out of my second book. It's called No Fear.
No Fear.
And,
okay.
No Fear. But I wish that was my life 24/7 working on it, right?
Right.
Hope y'all enjoy it. So it all started with a phrase that never felt right. Let's get it right. It all started with this phrase that never felt right. Yeah, let's get it right. It all started with this phrase that never felt right. Yeah, let's get it right. It all started with this phrase that never felt right. So shall I get it right? A friend, as innocent as ever, you know what's next? I don't see you as black. Look at the way you act and the way you speak. No Ebonics while selling burnt DVDs, and you ain't living off EBT. Cards, like welfare means stigma, like I mean enigma. You know, black but not really black. Oh, you're the whitest black guy I ever seen. You're not aggressive or threatening at all. Come here, look at him, honey. So articulate, I'm sick of it. Twisting my identity up like licorice. I just want to be free and fly like Icarus. But the closer I get to the sun, I'm burned down by expectations I got to overcome. Like being black is dumb. Like being black is a curse. Like being black means you're guilty, but never innocent. First, never first, only second class citizen. I just want to break out of all of these boxes and live again. But honestly, it didn't start like this. With all of the anger, it started with love and accepting who I was and turning the volume down on these clowns that would call me white. You know what? I wish I could turn that perception up when I looked in my rear view and saw the police cruiser's headlights. The officer asked me to exit the vehicle, and I complied. Like most citizens, I had nothing to hide, nothing but pride. I guess being black with dignity is a crime. The officer assumed my truck was full of work and that I knew how the drug dogs worked. It was my first offense, first speeding ticket. Back then, nah, I didn't get it. Fast forward to present day, and I realized that young black men still live through this, and that is why I wrote this. In fact, truth be told, I wrote this poem while vibing to a record composed by Kendrick Lamar. He told me that being black was beautiful, and I should shine like a star. And he said, get your paper, even though the system wants to see you rot behind bars. He told me, tell these black boys fly like Doc and Marty's car. That'll hardly start, because what you thought was trash from your past will put fuel in your DeLorean and give you enough force to move forward like you've been sipping on metachlorians. Just in the air, and everybody on the dark side to the story ends. Because really, it doesn't matter if your skin is purple or porcelain, because we are all orphans of sin. It's not always about your origins or where you begin, but where you end. This is ambition. Listen, before I finish, I'm going to take it back to the future like a TARDIS and set the bar higher than where the stars live. Because I'm a writer for hire, exposing liars, putting fire on these bars. Somebody should have told him, man. I'm an arsonist. This poem is a lighter. You are the fire. You are the fire. Shedding light on issues we often miss, because there was a lot of bloodshed in the street last year, and the year before that, and the year before that, and the year before. But I stay an optimist. No handgun. 6 shots fired, dead black body, buildings burning, riots run, that indictment right up the road in St. Louis was obvious. But we can either kiss the ring or clench our fists if money could buy us freedom. Welfare would never exist, because they're still gunning us down in the street like we never exist. But this isn't some guilt pulling a race car. No. This is a grandmother's pain. You think she's searching for vengeance? She's looking for love to refuel her heart's engine. Holding the history of 1,000 times the infinite amount of lynchings. So this is for the unmarked graves and the unset names and the unlocked chains wrapped around our brains, keeping us thinking the same. You think they saying black lives matter for no reason? Huh? We've been singing that same dumb in our hearts since Emmett Till stopped breathing. So I'll be in the street screaming, just let me be, just let me free, just let me eat. Just let me reach, man. Just let me walk down my home street. But I still chase chalk around my peeps and take these chains up off my feet and let me see my blackness as I define it. You think you would stand with Dr. King or Malcolm X if time was a tape recorder and you could rewind it? maybe not. Doing the right thing the moment you're supposed to do it isn't easy, but it isn't supposed to be. But as for me, I'm just going to be what I'm supposed to be. And that's quiet, articulate, not always angry, watching an anime, chilling, drinking iced tea. And for me, that means black.
Bravo. Bravo. I don't know how the college is going, but that right there is some fire. That right there is amazing. Wow. Wow.
Man.
I had goosebumps, you know, just going through that journey with you. Like, wow. So I got a question. Like,
man,
you know, where did you find an inspiration for that poem? That poem was called No Fear. Like, where did how did that poem come about?
I'll be honest again. I was having a conversation with some, assuming everybody felt the same way, but in my same circle. This is back, 2000. It's like before the first election, actually. Conversation about slavery from my poet friends, and I don't know how we missed that conversation, but some people had a different take on it, and it made me, I froze up at first, and then I was like, nah, I gotta speak unapologetically. And when I really started reflecting on just my black experience, because I grew up, like you said, Paducah, Kentucky, and high school that I was in. It wasn't the biggest, but anyway, I was a black athlete there. And really reflecting on the uniqueness of that situation, not realizing it while I was in it. It's like being a fish in water, you know. Ask the fish, you know, how's the water? And they're like, what the hell is water? But
right.
Once I realized the privilege of that situation and, like, my black experience was really kind of coddled until I got outside of where I grew up. And, you know, everybody don't know you, and cops just see you as another potential bust. And, you know, that's how the story within that poem came up, is just reflecting on some of the negative experiences I had with law enforcement. But mainly it was when they didn't know who I was. And, it was beginning down that thought process from that conversation about slavery, where it was like, well, people shouldn't complain about it. I'm like, wait, what? Hold up. I'm like, y'all, how you feel about this?
Huh.
Black people need to get over it. I'm like, hold up. I'm like, we're friends. How is this possible? But, and that's what it made me really, we got to talk to each other, you know, we really got to talk to each other.
Well, definitely. And then for all the guests that's out there, you know, feel free to call in 516-531-9540. If you have a question, comment, want to contribute to the conversation, anything you want to throw out there for Samuel, a.k.a. Snacks, you know, press 1, get in there on this conversation. You know, for me, you know, that's just like, wow. And it just feels like, you know, that poem is just like, especially with everything that went on, you know, especially in 2020, you know, 2019, you know, it's just like so relevant. I guess, when did you write this poem?
Oh, yeah, it was like 2015, close to 16. It was right before the election. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, obviously no one could have, you know, had the foresight to see us being here, 2020, pandemic, you know, a new peak of Black Lives Matter movement, and it's just where we are today. And just to see that your poem has so much, you know, relevance right now. I mean, in 2016, 2015, you know, I mean, like, I know, like, the, you know, it was a very heated election, and, you know, one that we've never seen before. And unfortunately, it probably opened the doors to stuff that we ain't even prepared to see in the future, right? But to see how that poem, you know, that you wrote it back then, I mean, How do you feel about it now? When you think about that poem, how do you feel about it now? I mean, like, I mean, it was written almost 5-6 years ago.
Oh man, really? I've been reciting a lot, you request a lot, but people that have heard it in the past, and I'm thankful I can contribute to spreading awareness and sparking conversations. But man, I'm hoping one day. I can just recite it for the value, for the artistic value, and also just telling my story. But, yeah, it's good to contribute, but I'm hoping that it eventually it's just used for those two things. Because, man, for it to be relevant right now, it shows that, oh, man, not a lot has changed. And I even talked about a different poem. I use the analogy, you know, we're studying racism, and we keep failing the test, and hopefully one day we open up the study guide and realize we got to do something different. We can't keep bubbling in the same answers and be like, this will fix it. And it's like, yeah, we're just going to keep failing.
Wow.
So my thing is the people that are filling in the boats to these questions are our elected officials. We need to pick somebody that's going to pick different answers.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely.
That's how I feel about it. Yeah.
And then, even with that said, I know you said that poem was from your second book. What is the title of your second book?
The Greatest Story Ever Sold.
And how did you come about this title?
Really, my grandmother inspired that title. Yeah, she I dedicated that book to her too, so that was fitting. But it's a play on the greatest story ever told, you know, the Bible and God. But what she inspired for me is just, you know, keeping God first and staying centered and being pure about what you do. That means, like, putting everything you got into it, as well as keeping 100 with yourself. And also, I think, religion and spirituality, whatever you want to call it. I think religion gets it twisted sometimes, even within stories of the Bible, man. It's like Jesus was not scared. Like,
right.
Just talking about, like, the person that he described. And I think all this timidness and not doing things with courage is not what my granny was about. So, yeah, that's where the inspiration from the title comes from.
Wow, that's very impactful. Once again, you know, that number to call in, 516-531-9540. Press 1. You have any questions? You have any comments you want to throw in? I know that was a great poem. We would love to hear, you know, what you guys think about that poem. I mean, wow. Once again, you know,
yeah,
just moving.
I appreciate it, man.
Hey. You know, I always got to speak the truth. So, you know, just, you know, just taking it there, you know, I guess, like, do you have new material coming out? Do you have some more stuff that you're working on?
Yeah, I'm working on another book. It's called The Iron Never Cooled. And, what that's about is, you know, I got multiple meetings. The first one, though, is definitely speaking to today, is like sometimes, like, historical events, and we'll just say, I mean, slavery is a long one. It's not something that happened, you know, in 1802, September 28th, you know, it was a process, you know, the slave trade and everything. But, like, those type of things just don't, you know, when it ended in law, it got worse for blacks as far as the situation, because, you know, they weren't even valued, in a sense, as property to help maximize profits within the business in the South. So it was like, kill them, who cares, type business. All the lynchings came from. But anyway, those things, those ideologies, those things just don't end. And it gets passed along. And I mean, so that iron never cooled. It's still malleable. It still can be molded. Some of these values that keep being passed down, and until we address, like, these cultural issues that keep getting passed down, is going to keep hurting us. And also, like, the iron never cooled in a sense. Like, whatever you want to do in your life, you can always make that change. You know, you're always malleable. I mean, it's only, your sore is only finished when you die. And then, I mean, that's it. The past can't be changed. Your past, your story is written. But until the story's written, until the ink wells are put up and you can't write anymore, like, you can put something different on your page. It's up to you, you know.
Most definitely. And I know that, you know, you've done some work, you know, with the Boys and Girls Club of America, Oscar Boys Club in Paducah, Kentucky. You know, and I'm going to keep making a lot of references back home, you know, where I'm from. Always got to represent. Were you able to, you know, inspire people to write and use art there?
Yes. That's one of my favorite things to do. Actually, I did a workshop with the community in Paducah last night, and it was very inspirational for me. I mean, it was very fulfilling for me just to provide a platform and, well, actually help provide a platform for people to be able to express themselves and also just transmit the knowledge that I've learned over the years and give people the tools to be able to use art to communicate with what they want to communicate unapologetically.
Awesome. And then I guess, you know, working at the Boys and Girls Club and being impactful there, I guess, how has that experience inspired your career and your growth?
This is interesting because I enjoy working there, but one of the things I was inspired from working there, because you always tell the kids, hey, do what you love, or, you know, you can do anything. It's like, you tell them that, and it's like, there's nothing wrong with that profession, even the job I had. But then it was like, hey, man, why don't I, like, double down on what I want to do? So, like, I stopped working there, and now I'm a developmental editor at a publisher, and I help writers put together their books, which they have a few more editors to go through. But as far as my journey with the writers that I've been working with for the past few months, I've helped them to develop their poems into to better poems. So when they go into the nitty gritty of the editing process, they have a good foundation to stand upon. And just seeing their growth and improvement along the process has been just as fulfilling as getting paid for doing it, if not more. And just the relationship, be able to build with them, and also just let them know, hey, I am a guide. I'm here to help. Like, as far as writing goes, you have to just write and go through the muck and the not-so-good writing to find your own insights and tell your own story. But if you're willing to put that work in, which they have, man, they've taught me things, so it's been a fun process.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. And then you've written three books. I know when I introduced you, I talked about you, you know, performing at different venues. I guess, you know, can you talk a little bit about some of the venues that you performed at, and, like, maybe even share, you know, a memory or so of your most one of your most impactful performances? And before you do, like I said, you know, press one if you want to get in on this conversation. The topic that we're talking about is using art as a tool to communicate. We have Samuel Hawkins, also known as Snacks, you know, a poet from Paducah, Kentucky, you know, sharing us a little bit of light on how we can do all of this. So go ahead, take it away.
I have a question.
Yes.
Okay, this is for Snacks. Okay, you mentioned cultural issues that keep getting passed down. Which cultural issues are you referring to?
One is just the use of the Confederate flag, just not realizing how some people view that. And also just, I hate to say this, but I mean, I'll just be unapologetic here, but just the way that tradition has been passed down, the misinformation that's given as far as, saying heritage and different things like that. I mean, because a lot of Confederate even statues, you know, were put up not even close to the Civil War. They were put up, you know, during the Civil Rights Movement to kind of quell that movement and you know, instill fear into the people trying to just fight for what America says every American deserves.
Yeah, that's powerful. Mm-hmm. I never even thought about it in that way. What did you think about that, Michonne?
I think that, like, cultural issues that are passed down, like, as far as the Confederate flag goes, I do not like them. I hate seeing them, but they're trying to relive to me something in the past where they weren't there. It's something that it was passed down to them like it was a glory days.
Mm-hmm.
That they pass down to their children, and keep it up like it was.
Yeah,
I mean, I know for me, you know, growing up in the South, you know, when it comes to, like, the Confederate flag, I had, you know, numerous different friends that was, you know, raised and taught in a manner of, you know, oh, this is heritage, just like some very ignorant stuff. You know, and from my perspective, you know, and I think, you know, probably from most of our, you know, readers and listeners' perspectives as well. And I know that we had a couple of issues with people logging on, continue to, you know, call in. I know I just got a call that, you know, someone was having an issue, you know, getting on. If you call back in, it will get you on here and press one. If you have a question or comment that you want to, you know, put forth into this conversation. But, Michonne, did you have any other questions for Snacks?
I do. I want to make a statement also concerning
mm-hmm.
the Confederate flag. I have also seen black people,
man,
which is
mm-hmm.
shocking to me, with the Confederate flag, with even T-shirts on with the Confederate flag. I've seen them with belt buckle on their jeans with a Confederate flag. And I'm thinking, like, okay, have they lost their mind? Do they understand what it's saying? And I even said something to a couple of them. And their answer was, it was so stupid that I had to tell them, you're stupid, you dumb. I cannot believe you got this on. I can't even believe what you're saying. And they acted like, well, you're just out of touch. You know, it's just a Southern thing. And they were from down South.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, you know how they treated your ancestors, your people? How are people being treated now with that?
Mm.
But, yeah. I mean, that was, like, hard to look at. I'm like, I can't believe you would have a Confederate flag. I didn't think nothing of it. Like, it wasn't anything wrong with it.
I'm with you. As soon as you said belt buckle, I remember specifically I was in, it was years ago. This is back in, like, 2012. Cause I remember with Trayvon Martin, all that going on. And there was a black dude with a Confederate belt buckle that I knew, and I just couldn't. I was like, hold up. I was like, what's the deal with that? And like you said, it was the same thing. It was like, this is just heritage, man. This is just how I grew up. But that shows you the type of stuff is taught, you know? And, man, it can even be transmitted to black people.
Most definitely. And then I guess, even with that being said, like, have you used your poetry, you know, to, I mean, obviously we heard No Fear, which is, you know, an amazing poem. I feel like, you know, it may, every time I hear that poem, Luckily for me, listeners, that's not my first time hearing it. But like every time I hear it, like I just get motivated. Like I just get, you know, like I just, you know, I feel it every single time. You know, I guess for yourself, you know, how like and you know, even using some of these, you know, objects that we were just talking about, how has that, you know, inspired you to use art to communicate with people? Snacks, was who got you on the air?
Oh, my bad. I was mute. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Oh, okay, sorry about that. Going to different schools, whether it be universities, high schools, even middle schools, and being able to have conversations after doing the poem is like all is super insightful. Because even people that don't necessarily agree will be able to see how I feel about it directly, and also opens it up and gives like especially when I do workshops, I guess you say it opens up and let people have an opportunity to express how they feel, but also it being in the art form, it's a lot more digestible as far as giving them images instead of just telling them, like even at the end of No Fear, you know, this isn't like pulling a race card. This is a grandmother's pain. She's not looking for vengeance. She's looking for love to refuel her heart's engine. And just putting things in perspective and really convincing people to feel that empathy without sacrificing how you truly feel about something.
Wow. Wow. Once again, 516-531-9540. Topic we're talking about today is using art as a tool to communicate. We have Snacks, a poet, profound poet. I mean, I think, you know, the best I've ever heard. You know, press one, got questions, comments that you want to – you say what?
I said, dang, all right, I'll let you say it.
Hey, I'm a, you know, I preach it to the world, and you know how I am, you know, unapologetically as a term that my brother liked to use, you know, unapologetically, I will use that. So, you know, just with that being said, you know, Snacks, I guess what would you say is your favorite poem that you have, you know, written?
Oh, dang, that I've written?
Yeah.
It would be, wow, that's a good question. I think it always changes throughout the years. I think right now my favorite one is, oh, dang, that's a great question. Yeah, great question. I would say either my favorite or Ode to the Sun, most definitely.
Okay.
I'm leaning towards Ode to the Sun because, yeah, that's like different, you know.
Ode to the Sun. That's something I want to make sure I hear that. And then I know, and just, you know, just for our audience that's out there, you're doing such great work, you know, and I'm going to continue to praise you, you know, because I didn't heard it. I didn't seen it, you know, firsthand. Where can you have 3 books out there. Where can people find you at? You know, if someone wanted to support your work, someone wanted to, you know, hear more of your poems, someone wanted to, you know, do a little bit more. Where can they find this find you at, and even purchase a book, or even listen to you, or even follow you?
I like your segue. they can. Website is samuelhawkins.org, and you can get my book from the website, and it can also link you to Amazon, where you find all 3 books, and then. Yeah, on Facebook, I think I am, Facebook, and then the slash and Snacks Poetry. And on Instagram, you can just follow me. It's Samuel Hawkins, and then also on Twitter, it's just Samuel Hawkins, made it easy. But also, yeah, YouTube channel. That would be the first thing I should say, at least. But yeah, I got a YouTube channel with videos that you can watch and share with family and friends. Hopefully the algorithm gods will be kind to me if you share it and it'll get spread around even more. But yeah, YouTube channel. All you gotta do is put in Samuel Hawkins poetry and all the poems will pop up easily.
Wow. I mean, you know, bravo. That's I mean, I love it. I mean, and you know, even taking a deeper dive, you know, obviously you are a profound poet. Have you been influenced by someone else's poetry, or I guess what poets have you know been a huge inspiration and benefit to you know you in your life?
It definitely started out with how much anybody watched death poetry back in the day. Man, that was huge on television. But she on the poet Black Ice on death poetry, Reeves. And then definitely I got into the Right Bloody poets. We got Anish Mashgani, Buddy Wakefield, and my favorite, Andrea Gibson. She's amazing. And Rudy Francisco, he's insane right now. He's really, really good. It makes me write every morning. I get up every morning, I'm like, I can get better. And yeah, their books and audio tapes are amazing. So yeah, that's what inspired me. Definitely inspired me. Yeah, most definitely. Still being inspired.
Awesome. And then you know, just going along off of that, I know for me growing up, especially, you know, February being Black History Month, you want to give shouts out, you know, to, you know, the Black poets that's out there. I know for me, one of the big inspirational poets that's out there that, you know, we all know about is, you know, Maya Angelou. I felt like, you know, she, you know, done numerous amounts of poems, you know, want to uplift Black people, but, you know, especially Black women as well. You know, I guess, how do you feel? Well, not necessarily how do you feel about Maya Angelou. I can probably guess the answer there myself, you know. But I guess, like, as a poet, you know, how have you been getting your voice out there and being heard? Like, I know that you have your YouTube channel. I know that, you know, you have your own website. How has that been going for you?
Well, it's been going well, especially in towards the end of July, everybody, Black History Month was like, need a poet. But honestly, the biggest thing is just relationships. I know I really started leaning on that and when I left the club, and also just reaching out to people. And no pun intended, but literally, like, no fear, because one of my problems is always reaching out. But yeah, just cultivating relationships, starting new relationships, and yeah, that's the biggest thing, honestly.
Awesome. Once again, that number 516-531-9540. You have questions, comments, you know, anything that you want to bring forth to this topic. Snacks, do you have another poem you can do for us, you know, to, you know, bring it in? Before you do, we do have one caller that, you know, wants to hop in, 5240. You're live on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hey, how are you doing, 5240? Yeah, we can hear you.
I'm doing good. This is, you know, a good topic, good poetry. You know, I used to, you know, go listen to some different poetry, you know, back in Florida years ago. But like I said, you know, I think that's a good thing, you know, a good topic, you know, about poetry, Black History Month. But I'm thinking about, what about some poetry about, you know, I've been thinking with the immigrants coming in and African Americans are on the populations on the decrease, so is whites. And, you know, you got the El Salvadors, you got the Spanish and all them taking over, even in Florida, the Cubans and all that. when, you know, can we start looking at some poems? Because I'm not a poet. If I was, I would say a little something. When can we start looking at poems about the phone is taking over, and one day they're going to take over and be in the White House? And, you know, and I just want to ask this question here. How would blacks benefit from that? You know what I mean? When the phone is take over, you know, they're going to mostly take care of themselves again. So is blacks going to ever rise to the occasion that we need to rise and help us out? Are we going to be on the downfall because we're not getting much education? We're not getting much, you know, stuff as we need to be getting, you know, because we're too busy doing TikTok and other little foolishness. I just want the young poet to just speak on that. I mean, if he could, maybe he can go one day in the basement and get some poet about the future for African Americans. Because honestly, we all know it don't look good for us in the future. And you know, the show is nice. I like listening to it, and you know, I'm gonna just take my questions off the air. Good show tonight.
Thank you so much, Carl. Hey, caller, before you go off the air, I do have a question before Snacks interject and, you know, and talk a little bit about that. What did you get an opportunity to listen to No Fear?
No, but I would. When he said, because I was listening, and right before you asked him about his Facebook page and all that other stuff, I was going to I can we follow the brother, but you had already answered that question for me. So now I know I can follow. And because that's one of the things I called and I was going to say, hey, man, how can we follow the brother? You know, you ain't put that out yet, but then you did. Like, time I was thinking about it, you put that in there. So, like, okay, well, that's, I ain't got to ask that. Mr. Jackson, he asked for me. But, you know, I just, you know, just some things on my mind and, you know, me and some African Americans are talking about. You know, the population for African Americans on the way down. You know, we lost a lot. We lost a few hundred thousand with Corona, and education levels. You know, we ain't reading up to a high level. We ain't doing so. The foreigners are going to school. They're coming over here and they're getting educated. And you know, sooner or later, we're gonna be always on the outside looking in because they finna take over anyway. And they're very arrogant because if you ever go to South Florida, if you ever go down into the arrogance, the Cubans, they'll look at you like, if you're African-American, they'll look at you, and even if some whites, they'll look at you like you ain't shit, and they came over here. They get educated, they get uppity, and, you know, I'm just saying that's just something that us African-Americans got to think about. Maybe the young brother can put a poet out there one night. I mean, not night. I mean, you know, one day he can go think about it. Like, damn, okay, yeah, yeah. I think he do some research. That's all I got to say.
What do you think about that, Snacks?
Man, I'm glad that last word, you said it right there. And I always tell people, whatever you're talking about, like, use your own experience and source material. And if you got to, like, don't be afraid to do a little digging and do research. And, man, I think as far as even, like, black people, it's been periods in history where, man, we had banded together. And I know everybody, especially after the Watchmen premiered on HBO and they showed the Tulsa massacre, not riots, massacre, you know, how that happened in history when they had Black Wall Street and how it was firebombed from the sky. And also, like, parallel to that, before that, in the 1800s, there were, not a majority, but there were a mixed amount of representatives from Wilmington, North Carolina, and there was a mutiny, and those black elected officials were taken out of office or killed, and replaced by, you know, an all white Congress in that state. But I say that to say, you know, it's possible to be able to band together, and I think. One of the problems with, like, you know, we are in America, and, like, this story of individual's effort is praised, and, like, you got to push somebody down to rise up. But I think, you know, with these different populations, you know, if we all come together, and I know this is going to be extreme, but because I'm always got Justin, I got to keep it a buck. Keep it 100. But even Martin Luther King, he was not a fan of capitalism. Like, and also he didn't do it everything by himself. Like, he got the help of people. And I mean, that's part of my problem, thinking I can't reach out and help somebody, or not reach out and get help. But I think putting away the myth of the individual rises and you don't need anybody, but I think coming together. But also, I heard what you said about other people coming from, you know, different countries, but I think part of it is, like, truly banding together, like, helping one another. I don't think it's, like, individual effort, even though that's what's praised and what we're told, but I think that's just told, and I'm speaking theory now, but I think that's told to keep us down and to keep us looking over our shoulder at one another, thinking we got to push even each other down to rise up, when really, you know, like they did in Tulsa, man, we can come together, have our own communities and strengthen our own economy. And I say that vaguely. I'm not sure how to do that, but I think that's definitely part of the solution.
Awesome.
I hope that speaks to the question. Also, I got to reiterate, thanks for sharing. I'm going to definitely think about that.
And then, you know, I want to, you know, me personally, like I said, I'm a big fan. You know, I'm a fan. Can you dig in your bag for me and, you know, spit something else for the listeners that's out there? Maybe some of those who didn't catch the first poem. Do you got anything else you could share tonight?
Yeah, most definitely. I can go ahead and do Ode to the Sun. I mean, it's Black History Month. Why not? All right. Yeah, this one's called Ode to the Sun. And yes, it starts off different. I was given a prompt to write the poem, and I was testing some things out, but it ended up working. I like it, so hopefully you like it and enjoy it. Forever youthful dandelion, rising to set your waltz on our oceans, can I have this dance? God bless your holy rays, they arrange like violin strings. So go ahead and plant your song on a full moon like a last kiss. So when night arrives like a promise we never intended to keep, we'll know that you're waiting at an altar in the sky for our gaze to kiss you soft and hold you close like lovers holding hands. You're a golden wedding band, the promise that always returns. Dragging morning behind you like train carts. Those train tracks lead toward tomorrow, and I hope we'll follow, man. I am praying that we'll follow. But a lot of us, yeah, a lot of us, like my grandmother said, a lot of us are in a hurry, headed in the wrong direction. So gently guide us back. Yes, teach us how to shine again. This world needs light to make these roaches scatter. Be the lamp that never forgets to shine. Be the sun that never forgets to shine. The sun never sets. We just turn our backs on light. Don't turn your back on the fight. When things get hard, go harder. Yes, go harder. Your life is a book. Let the bravery in your bones be the author. Be the knee on the back of our star-spangled banner. Make the song spill its guts like a disemboweled witness with everything to lose. Twist its neck like a filthy sponge until dead slaves spill out. I want to see, yes, I want to see America's horrors with no CG on the budget. So before you put your hand over your heart like you love it, be the light that scatters the liberty to the third verse of our national anthem. Dock your prejudice on the shore of brotherhood. Anchor your kneecaps until they kiss the roots of my family tree. And let's not forget the branch holding the rape that painted my skin tone honey chocolate. Before you speak with absolute certainty, son, I think you need to check your optics, because we both see a flag waving. You may see your ancestors' heritage. Well, I see my ancestors' bondage. You may want to see a statue or Robert E. Lee or Lloyd Tillman. Well, I want to see a statue of Maya Angelou and Ruby Bridges. You may hear the whistle of Dixie and other Confederate classics. Well, I hear the dead speak from shallow graves. Man, they ain't even get a casket. These are America's true colors. Why mask it? The same flame used to ignite your fireworks and celebrate the 4th of July contained the same flame that left my ancestors in ashes. So you may hear the boom. To celebrate your independence, well, I hear the gentle whisper of my grandmother's testimony told on a South Carolina college campus. She went there to teach, but some of her mind had already been made up, like 3 a.m. Army bed sheets. Some of the not-so-neat folks, why they wore those white sheets like ghosts. Now the blokes, they sport khakis and a tiki torch. It's the same hate draped in a different uniform. The story my grandmother shared with me made the hallelujah in my chest curl into a fist just to hear my grandmother say, we must be open like an amen if we are ever to hold hands with the ones that held us down. She said we must be open like 3 a.m. textbooks during finals week because the study break for racism in America 101 is over, and I hope we pass this time. Man, I am praying we learn something and actually pass this time. Because only light, only enlightenment, only light can drive out this darkness. And it's not easy being light. Oh, no. Because it doesn't make you bulletproof. And it burns. But it also purifies. See, all of our hearts bear a dark room. Any stories that haven't been told are photos that haven't been developed yet. And it's time for some exposure. It's time for some exposure, some light. And thank God that we all came from the sun.
Wow. That was powerful. That yeah. Oh, man. And what was the name of that poem?
Ode to the Sun.
Ode to the Sun. 516-531-9540, press 1. I mean, this guy is up here. He has the mic on fire, and somebody just threw gasoline on it. And I'm telling you, California, better watch out. I'm telling you, this guy's hot. I mean, where'd you get the inspiration for that poem?
It started off as a prompt. My friend was like, yeah, I want you to write, don't say the sun, but write it about the sun. And then, I forget what it was. That was basically the biggest thing. And then that just kind of made me go in a different direction because I was like, you know, what does the sun do? And it's like, you know, it gives light. That's the basic thing. But just with everything that was going on, it's just like we really just going to keep everything in the dark. It's like, man, we got to expose all this. Like, and be the light. Like when we walk into spaces, like dark vacates, because we gonna shine a light and be honest and spit that truth and live that truth. Almost, you know, like what she said when she was like, I see this belt buckle with this Confederate flag. Like I gotta go ask questions about this. I ain't about to just sit silent. Like people mm-hmm. already took gunshots already. It's like, man, if we got the liberty to talk about it, hell, I'm gonna take it. So, mm-hmm. man, that's really where it came from, man.
Man, that's deep. 516-531-9540. Get in on this conversation. We have
question.
All right, we have Snacks here on the line. He's a poet from Kentucky, Paducah. He's killing it. He's killing it. Michonne, you say you have a question?
I do. Do you do workshops or seminars?
Yes, I do. I've been doing a lot of them lately since COVID. I do them over Zoom, but they've been working out.
Okay. And do you put that information on your website? Like if somebody wanted to, you know, join a workshop or a seminar, would that information
yes.
be there?
Oh, you're talking about the next ones I'm doing? I usually, like, I do them for different groups. I haven't, as far as like even the last one I did it with through a community organization here, and then also with the schools in this area. I do workshops with them on Tuesdays and Thursdays virtually. But if you were or anybody else, like as far as like getting a group together to do a workshop, I'd definitely be open to that, most definitely.
Okay. John, is that something you want to do a workshop?
Yeah, it's something I'm thinking about because I know a lot of people who actually write. So, and I think that, you know, they might need some pointers and can use some expert advice and help. So yes.
Awesome. I think we got. I was gonna say, you know, we gotta get that set up. You know, I mean, like I said, you know, Snacks has 3 books out published. You know, they I know Christmas is already gone. My birthday has passed, but they make wonderful gifts as well. Buy 2, buy 3. You know, I mean, you can't deny the brother's talent. You know, you just can't deny it. You could try, but you know, the light will shine. You know. So, go ahead, Michonne. Did you have any more questions for Snacks?
Yes. Okay. What would you tell someone if they asked you how, say they write and say they wanted to start to do something to get their work published? So what advice would you get on what steps they should take, things like that?
Yeah, I would. Oh, yeah. First, I guess the first thing was find out what type of publisher you want to go through, because you could, like, because even the company I work for, the publisher, is a hybrid. So the writers I work with, they all retain all the IP, all the intellectual property of the book, but the publisher just helps them get it out. So it's like as far as the printing of the book, they'll front that cost, but like the writer will have to put forth some of the cost in the start of it. And that's like, especially if you're first time publishing, I would say that's a good route to go, the hybrid option, because retaining like all your rights to your book is huge. And then I went the self-publishing route the first time, and that can be very, very tough because, I mean, you're responsible just for everything from your cover, your layout, your typography. I had to learn so many things, just even like little minute details of whatever pictures you want to load got to be like at least 300 dots per inch. And if it's black and white, if it's color, it needs to be like 600 dots per inch, and like learning all this jargon. But I think like if you go the hybrid route, you know, you get a lot of guidance for that. And then also the traditional publishers where, you know, you get somebody to publish you and they front all the costs. And I mean, the good thing about that is, like, a traditional publisher, you know, they're really going to be able to put you out there. Usually you got to submit your work and they accept you. But I would just say exploring those options, you know, looking up, you know, self-publishing, the hybrid option as far as publishing, and then, you know, your traditional publisher. And I think the steps for self-publishing is definitely educating yourself on, you know, first of all, just getting all, you know, you're writing together, just writing nonstop. Really, that's the first thing. And then I think if you're going the traditional route, you get a lot of assistance. You can walk into it with like literally half a notebook, and if you put in the work, you'll get a lot of assistance to make it through publishing, which that option, and I don't know, I'm getting long-winded on this answer, but that option can last like 6 to 8 months. So it's not like oh, we'll get you a book really quick. It's you really going through the process. And then if you're going the traditional route, like, get rejected a lot. Look to keep submitting and getting rejected until finally somebody picks you up. But I hope that helps. If you got another follow-up question, I definitely understand, because I said a whole bunch.
I guess I know you said on your end that you first took the self-publishing route. I guess, where did you find that information? Like, did someone, you know, walk you through it? I mean, like, where did you get all of that?
I went through, it was called CreateSpace. It's through Amazon. Now it's called KDP, Kindle Demand Publishing. All the information on there, if you go to KindleDemandPublishing.com, it's an Amazon affiliate, and all you got to do is make a Amazon profile, and everything's on there. But it was just going through all that information, and I did not, at first I was trying to do it by myself, you know, not getting help. But then I realized, I was like, I need to recruit people. So, I mean, I had to go find a graphic designer. And, yeah, she helped me with, like, I could even hand her the material I was trying to learn so I could, like, make the cover I wanted. And she was able just to do what I was trying to do for months and literally an hour. So, yeah, having a graphic designer that can understand the jargon and, like, translate it to what you want is a, and you work with her, Jess. Yeah, like, you work with her. She's amazing. And then I found editors and different types of editors. You know, you got to have somebody for – that's another thing I have to learn because all editing is not the same. You know, you want to go through a person that's going to give you feedback to make the content better, not worried about grammar, all that other stuff. Just make the content better. It's just resonating with the reader. And, like, getting feedback is essential. It's essential. Like, it's a constant process. So I would say that over – I've said it three times. Get feedback, get feedback, get feedback. And then the next editor is you want to go through it and you want to copy edit it. Like, you want to go through the lines and make sure you got your line breaks where, speaking of poetry, you know, make sure you got your line breaks where you want them, the periods, the commas, and little mistakes. You know, do you want this to be capitalized? Is this supposed to be capitalized? Going through it line by line. And then you got one last edit before it goes out. And this editor looks at it and you don't look at it again. They make those changes, but it needs to become a point where you don't look at it anymore so you finally get it out. Because there's a possibility you're going to have mistakes, but eventually you got to get it out. But other people do it differently, but I would recommend, like, those three, you know, getting your graphic designer, get feedback, focusing on content, a copy editor, and then one last fresh eyes editor to look at it overall one more time. And I know there's a lot, but if you want to do it right, that's what I would say, that your book can be. I would go through that process like that.
Wow. Awesome. And then we had 1111. You was on a dot, 1111. If you have a question, you got a comment, or something you wanted to contribute to the conversation. One, 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 you there? Okay.
Might be muted.
I'm not for sure. 1111. All right. No, awesome. No, definitely understand that. I mean, that sounds very, you know, first off, you know, educational. You know, like, that's dope. I guess we talked a little bit about, you know, where you're from. We talked a little bit about, you know, some of your poetry that you've done. You know, we went down this journey with you, you know, for the long haul. I guess what do you have next? You know, you published three books. What do you got coming next?
Well, man, I am, like I said, the new position I am with. And also, if y'all looking for a hybrid option, I work for New Degree Press. So look them up, and if you enter the program, you can ask for me, and I can help you with your next project if you're interested in publishing a book. And, I mean, it's super comprehensive. But I'm wrapping up with those authors right now. And actually, I begin with a whole new round of authors next, the week after next, actually. The week after next, I start with a whole new round of authors, and I'll just be doing developmental editing, just helping them make their project content-wise. And, yeah, working on my book, The Iron Never Cooled. I'm looking forward to jumping into that even more so after I wrap up the group of authors that I'm working with right now. And then also, yeah, I'm booking dates right now, not only for workshops, but down the line when we're able to get back out safely in the physical world, booking dates right now. So whether it be schools, like you said, schools, festivals, whether it be, man, what was I going to say? Like conferences, yeah. I do a lot of conferences. And, yeah, I've even done weddings, birthday parties. So I don't want to stray too much, but was actually down in Florida, and I was speaking at a coffee shop then, and a woman booked me to do her granddaughter's birthday party, and it was awkward, but it ended good, but it started off super awkward because it was a surprise. But and it was all white people too. They were like, "What is this? Who are you?" Like, they were asking so many questions. But
right.
But anyway, that's what I got going on.
Awesome. Michonne, do you have any follow up questions for Snacks?
Yes. The books that you're writing, are they just poetry or you writing more than that?
Right now it's just that I'm writing is just poetry. But the ones that I'm helping people work on, they're poetry and memoirs. But for the publisher I work for, they do all types of books. They do magical realism, fiction, nonfiction, poetry, memoirs. They do it all. So
what is the name of that company again?
New Degree Press.
New Degree Press?
Yes, ma'am.
New Degree Press. Hey, check them out. I mean, like I said, you hear Snacks, you know. He's killing it over here. You know, I have full, you know, confidence in his skill set. I know I've performed with you a couple of times. And I remember we had the crowd rocking, you know, in so many different ways. 516-531-9540. You know, press 1 if you have something you want to, you know, contribute to the conversation. We'd love to have you on air. Any questions that you guys might have, you know, bring it on in. I guess, you know, back to one of my questions before, we had a caller ask you a question. One of the things I wanted to ask you was, you know, what was one of the most impactful venues that you have done on your end?
Yeah, man, it was actually at a university. It was at Murray State University, actually. It was at an event called Take Back the Night, and that was to raise awareness for sexual assault, rape survivors, and just violence against humanity, period. And mm-hmm. I did a poem at the end of the event, and it was my third time doing the event. And the poem I did was called God's Forgiveness. And first of all, just being at the event and hearing people, like, have the courage, like, to tell their story and what they've been through and how it affected them, and encouraging people to speak out and speak up so other people don't have to live in shadows of themselves and be in shame. And just being a part of it was beautiful because it was about empowering humans and people. And that just, like, the inspiration from that. And I was just like, hey, I let it be known as soon as I got up there, I'm here to just merely help raise awareness and give to the program and enhance it. And I mean, yeah, it was one of the best events to be a part of, and also just be able to perform and have something to give to that event and to help out that way and to reinforce that, you know, survivors are supported. It was a beautiful event.
Man, that's deep. That's deep. I know, you know, you've done 2 poems for us. You're on YouTube. You're on Instagram. You have your own website. Can you just give out your information one more time so people can, you know, make sure that they log on, go check you out, and see some of the stuff that you're doing that's out there? I mean, I think it's. I can't praise you enough.
Oh, man, it's SamuelHawkins.org, Facebook/SnacksPoetry, Instagram, Samuel Hawkins, Twitter, Samuel Hawkins, and then, YouTube, if you search Samuel Hawkins Poetry, it'll pop up, most definitely. And my page is actually, yeah, Samuel Hawkins II for YouTube.
And then if you had one more poem that you could do for us, what poem would that be?
I'll switch it up. I would do My Favorite.
It's called My Favorite?
That's the name of the poem. Yeah, it's called My Favorite, yeah.
Okay.
Because,
okay. How did you get that name?
I don't know if anybody...
We got to talk about that.
Oh, yeah. I know, right? That should have been my answer straight up. My Favorite. He got that name because it's like, be your... Don't be your own worst enemy, I guess. Like you are, you know, be your hype man. You're going to get enough negativity in this world and people praying for your downfall and things like that. So why add to the chorus of people that sing to your destruction? Add to the voices that pray for your success. Add to that energy. And, yeah, be your own favorite. Like, enjoy your stuff. It's like, hey, you don't like it. I don't care. I like it. Like,
right.
And it's hard for me to do that sometimes. Like, I be having doubts. And it's like, what? Why are you having doubts? And even in the story within the poem, it's like, people come to me and be like, shoot, you over here, you know, all this negative stuff. I like that. And I'm over here saying negative stuff about something I put out there. And people over here like, shoot, I like it. I love it. I'm like, and why not embrace it? And that's why I've been practicing that. Everything you said, I haven't been like, nah, I've been like, hey, I'll take it. Hit that. Get enough negativity. And I need to love myself like I tell other people too. So that's how the poem got its name and its creation.
I like it. I like it. You know, let's see what you got.
All right. So I spilled a cup of coffee on my favorite author's book of poetry this morning, Lord of the Butterflies. Now that really got the pages pumping. Accidents happen, not that it needed to, cause when my eyes touch her words, my pulse surges like a breaker box that ate lightning for lunch. Oh yeah, she's electrifying, outstanding. And I would expect nothing less, but I always know there's room to grow if she can confess that her best poems have not been written yet. Man, my best life is still a blueprint, but I want those blueprints to live in the past like newsprints. A good friend asked me, what happens when our dreams become memories? If it matters to us, we'll give it our energy. Same goes for people. If they matter to us, we'll give them our energy. Well, how much do you matter to yourself? And can a friend be a friend if they always shrink the light others seeing you? We should treat people how we want to be treated, but how are you treating yourself now? How do you speak to yourself? Do you sheath release the sword in your throat to cut down your own hopes, your own dreams? Do you pull the trigger, even though your confidence has its head up, to catch your anxieties, trust falling into the breadbasket of your faith? Only one person can stop you from being great, and it has everything to do with the person that controls the choices you make. Now, who controls the choices you make, huh? Your mama, your daddy, your brother, your culture, the way you were brought up, perhaps the genes you inherited. What controls the choices you make? And do you judge others as harshly as you judge yourself? And if you do, you're mean. And I hope your dreams die slow, via waterboarding going wrong, and a jacuzzi full of dog piss. Okay, that's just my Sam's side, my father's side, coming out when I write. I'm going to try to keep the thoughts holy like the pulpit. I'm just here to tell you, don't shoot yourself down like your tongue is a gun and your thoughts are a full clip, loaded with reasons not to live. Do not sell yourself short like God gave you permission to haggle down the price of your existence. Whether your mother had to be split open like a melon or pushed repeatedly, man, you got here through persistence. Walk into your purpose on purpose. All of our lives have a finite distance, and we'll go the distance whether you like it or not. So why not see your goals go the distance? And do not lean on your own understanding and lead yourself astray. It doesn't serve yourself to self-serve, are you? Giving yourself the positive energy you deserve, or simply satisfying a temptation when your body has an urge? This poem, yes, this poem is a finger in the back of my throat to purge any negative words that curve my dreams of being a better human being, because this isn't about being seen, because everybody want to be in the spotlight until it's time to truly observe and be exposed. This is dedicated to those that got so low they had to scale Mount Everest 3 times just to reach their ground zero. Sometimes you have to be your own hero when no one else can be found. Sometimes you have to be the light when darkness is all around because poets have come to me and have confessed that I am their favorite poet. What do? I immediately shrink my existence until it can fit on the tip of my pen so I can write myself off thinking, let me introduce you to good poetry. Then come to me with your compliments to rest on my altars of self-doubt and uncertainty. Am I being my biggest ally or my worst enemy? Huh? Because what if the sun was shy? What if the sun was afraid to let it all hang out? What if the sun used this light to search this galaxy for brighter lights instead of just shining? How many times have you dimmed the bulbs in your halo so the devil could shoplift the holy God's stocks in your soul? Hey, don't shrink your existence because small minds won't buy it. Maybe it's time you align yourself with other stars that would like to shine like Orion. So check your notification. Check your prayer box, man. God has been writing you a letter before your first exhale. Check that mailbox. And I tell you what, accept the greatness God grafted to your future. Accept the mistakes we need to leave in our past. And accept the expectations God tattooed to the back of your behind like a birthmark, because all of us, yes, all of us, have a light we can shine to help someone else escape from the dark.
That was powerful. Sean, what did you think about that?
I loved it.
That was deep, wasn't it?
I love poetry. So, you know, it's...
Did he have the butterflies in your stomach, you know, bouncing around?
All that. I'm a definitely buy the books.
Oh, man. Hey, much love. I appreciate it. I really do.
You know where to go, you know, to get it. Tell them one more time where they can go and get that.
If you scroll down, you'll see the books right there. You go on Amazon. You put Samuel Hawkins, all of them will pop up. And, again, I appreciate any support. And that can come in the form of just listening and also being inspired. And truly just if you take the inspiration and, you know, use it in your own life, like, that's huge for me. So, any type of support and buying a book, you know, I will take that. But in any of those ways, just on support and listening and using it and taking forth into the world is that's making my life. That's why I'm here. So I appreciate y'all most definitely.
Awesome.
I also have another request also.
Okay.
When I buy your books, I want them autographed also.
Oh.
He's famous for that.
Yeah, just send me an email then, most definitely.
Okay. I will definitely
send me an email,
do that.
And I can send you, because I have books on deck, so we can either Venmo, PayPal, whatever. I do Venmo, PayPal, Cash App. There's some I've done before that I can't even remember now. Yeah, if you send me an email, I can send you a book, most definitely.
Okay.
Awesome. Hey, Snacks, I think, you know, you killed it tonight. Any last words that you have for the audience that's listening?
Oh, man, I love y'all. Appreciate you listening. And again,
think we have one more. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish that.
Oh, me? Or somebody else?
Yeah. Not you. You can go ahead and finish.
Oh, okay, yeah. Oh, no, yeah. Appreciate you listening. Any support just by listening and also just taking forth the inspiration and putting it out in the world in your unique way is huge. So, yeah. Hey, thank you, Justin. And is it Michonne? I want to make sure I'm saying the name right.
You're welcome.
Right? Yes. Okay, yeah, thank you for the opportunity. Do not take that lightly. And, yeah, that's the words I got to share, man.
Awesome. Once again, Samuel Hawkins, also known as Snacks, stage name, you know, wonderful brother, killing it in the game. Thank you. And you're always welcome, you know, to come back on our show, be a part of it in any kind of way you like. We appreciate
you. Hey, when the
you,
new book out, I got you. It'd be a few months. I got you.
Hey, you know, come out here. That's got to spit something from that book, you know. I know you're always bringing that heat. And you know, keep bringing it, my brother. And, you know, like I said, you're always welcome on the show.
All right.